Chapter 8 Evolution. Miranda spoke.
Where are we?
Pug heard the words, though he knew they were projections of her mind. He wondered at that particular aspect of the human mind which sought always to force something to fit its perceptions, irrespective of what the true nature of the thing might be.
On our way to heaven, he answered. How long have we been travelling?
She asked.
It seems like years.
Funny, answered Pug. It seems but moments to me.
Time is warped.
Akela was right, she observed.
He usually is, said Pug.
The region they travelled through was a multicoloured distortion of space, or at least that was how Pug viewed it. Stars swam through vortices of violent colours, rather than the void of night he expected. And the stars were, as often as not, colourless.
I've never seen anything like this,
said Miranda, and to Pug's mind she seemed to whisper in awe.
How do you know where to go?
I follow the line, he answered, indicating with a thought the fragile line of force they were following from Midcamia.
It goes on forever, she said. I doubt it, but I think Macross the Black went on a very long journey when he last left Midcamia. We're following his journey.
Apparently, said Pug. They voyaged through the cosmos, and at last they descended to a world, a green and blue orb that circled a star. Around it circled three moons.
We're back where we started, said Miranda.
Pug turned his attention to the world below, and it was indeed Midcamia.
No, he said. I think we've come to a time much earlier than when we left. Time travel? I've done it before, he answered. You must tell me of this some day.
Pug projected amusement.
I've never been fully in charge of those events, and I've always felt the risks far outweighed the benefits. You don't think travelling in time to kill this Emerald Queen in her crib would be a good idea?
She asked, and Pug detected the familiar dry humour in the question.
We can't, or else we would have. There is that paradox, isn't there? More, there are laws that we can't begin to contemplate.
He fell silent, and Miranda couldn't judge if it was a moment or a year before he spoke again.
All of reality as we know it is but an illusion, a dream of some agency we can barely comprehend. It sounds so trivial, put that way. It's not. It may be the most profound thing humankind is able to comprehend.
They moved down toward a scene familiar to Pug. Standing near the wreckage of the city of Sethanon was an army, led by King Liam. Pug felt odd emotions as he viewed himself, 50 years earlier, listening to Macross's goodbye again.
"What's he saying?"
asked Miranda.
"Listen," said Pug.
A younger Pug said, "Yes, but it's still a hard thing." A tall, thin man, wearing a brown robe with a whipcord belt and sandals, said, "All things come to an end, Pug. Now is the end of my time upon this world. With the ending of the Valharu presence, my powers have returned fully. I will move on to something new. Gattis will join me, and the others at my island are cared for, so I have no more duties here." Miranda said,
Gattis didn't leave.
Pug said,
I know.
She focused her attention on her lover and felt something that was familiar.
You find this funny? Ironic, perhaps,
came the answer. Macross the Black, legendary sorcerer supreme, was bidding goodbye to a younger Tomas, who stood resplendent in his gold and white armor. Miranda said,
He's doing it again, isn't he? What?
Asked Pug.
Lying to you.
No, not this time, answered Pug. He honestly believes what he's saying about the Pantathians and Myrmidamus.
Macross said, The powers granted to the one who posed as Myrmidamus were no mean set of conjurer's illusions. He was a force. To have created such a one, and to have captured and manipulated the hearts of even a race as dark as the Moradel, required much. Perhaps, without the Valhuru influence across the barriers of space and time, the Serpent People may become much as others, just another intelligent race among many. He stared into the distance a moment. Then again, perhaps not. Be wary of them.
He was right on that count, said Miranda. The Pantathians could never be redeemed. The Valhuru heritage has warped them beyond redemption.
No, said Pug. It's something else. Something much larger.
Pug and Miranda watched as Macross finished his goodbyes, and Pug felt stirrings of old emotions.
It was a difficult time, he said to Miranda.
He sensed more than heard her understanding. Macross, more than any other man in Pug's life, was the center figure in Pug's development. Pug still had dreams of his days in the assembly of magicians on the world of Kellawan, dreams in which Macross was among his teachers. Pug knew there were things still locked away in his head, things that only Macross or time could unlock. Pug and Miranda saw Macross turn and walk away from the assembled army, from Pug and Tomas. As he moved, he began to fade from sight.
Cheap theatrics, said Miranda. No more, said Pug. Watch.
He shifted his perceptions and saw that Macross was not vanishing from sight, but was changing. His body continued to walk, but it became intangible, a thing of mists and smoke. Power flowed upward as Macross spoke to some unseen agency.
What is this? Asked Miranda.
I'm not sure, answered Pug, but I have suspicions.
Master, said Macross to the unseen agent, what is your bidding?
Come, it is time, said the voice.
Miranda and Pug sensed joy in the sorcerer as he rose up on mystic energies, flying into the void, much as Miranda and Pug had in Elvendar.
Look, said Miranda,
and below they could see his body lying upon the ground.
Has he died?
Not really, said Pug, but his soul is moving elsewhere. That is what we must follow.
Through years and across vast distances, they flew in close pursuit, chasing the very essence of Macross the Black. Again, time had no meaning as they moved across the vast gulf between stars, only to return to Midcamia at last, to be confronted again with a new vista, as they descended from the skies to a point high above the vast peaks of the Ratangari Mountains.
"We've been here before," said Miranda.
"No," said Pug. "I mean, yes,
We've been here, but not yet.
Look, there's the celestial city you created.
No, answered Pug. This is the real thing.
Across the peaks of mountains, capped with snow, sprawled a city of incredible beauty. Crystal pillars held aloft roofs like giant diamonds, brilliant facets sparking with an inner fire. Pug said,
Below, thousands of feet below the clouds, rests the necropolis. This is where I led you, and this resembles the illusion I created for you. But mine was a shadow to this.
Miranda agreed.
This is solidity, where your illusion was smoke and shadow, but it also feels less real.
What I built was created to fool your physical senses. This is a thing of the mind. We are experiencing it through direct contact, without any instrument of perception intervening.
I understand, she said, yet I am disoriented.
Pug suddenly shifted before her eyes, and he was as she knew him, a man of solid form, a body as familiar to her as her own. Is this better? He asked, and the words seemed to issue from his mouth.
Yes, she answered.
You can do the same. You have only to will it so. She concentrated and suddenly felt herself become solid, and, holding up her hand before her eyes, she saw it as she expected it to be, solid flesh. It is but another illusion, said Pug, but one that will give you a firmer foundation upon which to stand. The hall in which they stood was similar to the one of illusion Pug had created to deceive Miranda when they had first met. When she had first come searching for Pug, he had led her a merry chase, finally ending up in the Ratangari Mountains, only a short distance from here. He had created an illusionary version of this place in which to hide from her. Miranda said,
This is similar, but so much more.
The ceilings above were vaults of heaven themselves. Lights shone down that were stars. Miranda saw that where in Pug's illusion small areas had been set aside for the worship of each of the gods, here the areas were the size of cities. In the distance, the line of energy they had followed from the time of Macross's departure to the present descended in a gentle arc, coming down from the ceiling and disappearing beyond their perception. As they moved toward it, they passed an intersection of two paths and stood where the areas of four gods touched. Odd stirrings in the air caused Miranda to say,
Can you feel that?
Again, shift your perception, Pug told her. Miranda experimented, and suddenly the hall was filled with shadowy figures. Like the energy beings they had become in the groves of Elvendar, these beings lacked features and identifying marks. But where Pug and Miranda had been brilliant beings of light, these were shadowy figures, barely perceptible with a faint illumination.
What are they?
Prayers, answered Pug. Each person who prays to the gods is heard. We perceive that prayer as an icon of the person praying. Miranda moved down the path and looked upward. A huge statue, many times the size of a human, rested upon a throne of azure. The figure was of a man, still and white, with a faint blue tinge. His eyes were closed. Few of the shadow figures moved near this statue.
Who is this? She asked.
Aeortis, dead god of the sea. Killian tends his domain until he returns.
He's dead, but he's returning?
You'll understand more soon. But for now, suffice it to say that if my suspicions are right, There's far more concerned with this war than merely defeating mad creatures bent on mindless destruction. He led her to another intersection. Pointing at a distant wall, he said, "Turn your mind's eye toward that distant vista, and tell me what you see." She did as she was bid, and at last a giant symbol appeared on the wall. It was incomprehensible to her for what seemed a very long time. Then it resolved itself into a pattern. "I see a seven-pointed star of Aishap, above a field of 12 points in a circle." "Look deeper," he instructed. She did so, and after a minute another pattern resolved itself. "I see another pattern, with four bright lights overlapping the top 4 points of the star, and there are many dim points between the 12 bright ones. Of the 3 points of the star, below those that are brightly lit, tell me what you see." Miranda concentrated on them, and after a moment she saw what Pug meant.
"One of them is dimly alight. The one in the center. The one to the right of it,"
she faltered.
"What?"
he asked.
"It's not dim. It's blocked. Something is preventing it from being seen."
Pug said, "That's what I perceive too. What of the remaining light?"
"It's dead."
Then I think I may be close to knowing the truth."
The tone he projected into her mind led her to think he wasn't pleased to learn this particular truth. They continued along. They reached the farthest corner of the Hall of the Gods and found themselves between two statues. One was totally lifeless, and Pug said,
"Wodar Hosper, the dead god of knowledge. So much we might know if he were to return."
"Does no one worship knowledge any more?"
"A few," said Pug, "but might and riches seem to occupy humankind's time more than anything else. Of all the men I've met, only Nakor seems truly driven to know."
"Know what?"
"Everything," he answered with amusement. They turned and regarded the other statue. The faint line that had been the spirit of Makros descended into the head of the statue. Miranda looked at the features of the statue and gasped,
"Makros!"
"No," answered Pug. "Look at the name across the foot of his statue."
"Sarig," she said. "Who is he?"
"The not-quite-so-dead god of magic."
"That's Makros the Black," she blurted. And for the first time since he had known her, Pug saw in Miranda's visage true confusion and even a little fear.
"Makros is a god?"
asked Miranda, and for the first time since he had met her, Pug sensed a genuine flash of concern in her voice. The mocking, dry humour was gone.
"Yes," he answered. "And no."
"Which is it?"
"We'll know better when we talk to him," answered Pug. "I think I know the answer, but I want to hear it from him."
Pug willed himself into the air until he stood before the giant, immobile statue's face. Loudly he called,
"Makros!"
He was greeted by silence. Miranda moved to stand next to Pug and said,
"What now?"
"He sleeps. He dreams."
"What is all this?"
she asked.
"I still don't understand."
"Makros the Black is attempting to rise to godhood," answered Pug. "He seeks to fill the void left by the departure of Sarig. Or Sarig created Makros the Black so that someday he would rise to replace him. Something like that." He pointed to the line of force. "That line still functions, and at the other end we'll find the mortal body that we know as Makros. But the mind, the essence,
The soul, that is here, within this being that is forming. They are one and yet different, connected yet apart.
How long will it take, this rising to godhood?
Asked Miranda, not attempting to hide the awe in her voice.
Ages, answered Pug softly.
What do we do?
We wake him up. The illusion that was Pug closed his eyes and focused his attentions within. Miranda felt energy building within the sorcerer and a mighty magic being forged. She waited, but when she expected some sort of release of energy, it continued to build. Soon she was in awe, for while she had thought she understood the magic arts and the limits of Pug's talents, she saw she was wrong on both counts. After moments more, she became truly astonished, for while her own knowledge of magic was not inconsequential, this was a feat beyond her capacity. Suddenly an explosion in the air rent the image before them. The sound of a thousand cymbals clashing rang in the air, deafening the senses. Light exploded outward, and Miranda saw something for only an instant. The eyes of Macross opened, regarding them. Into darkness they plunged, and the last thing she heard was a faint, plaintive, "No!" Pug's mind reached out to touch her own.
"This is difficult. I will attempt to follow him to where he flees. Our bodies will appear wherever we wish them to be, so follow me as I follow Macross." "I know how," she answered, and sensed him leave.
Suddenly the blackness was everywhere, and for an instant Miranda felt fear, for she had no point of reference. Then she opened her eyes. She was cold. The stone floor of the room seemed to drain the warmth from her body, and she sat up, shivering. She was in Pug's study at Stardock. She knew what the elven spellweavers had told them, that their bodies would appear wherever they were needed when they returned from their spiritual journey, but she had expected to be still in Elvendar. Now she was hundreds of miles distant. Pug lay unconscious next to her, barely breathing. She had no idea how long they had been gone from Akela and Tethys' care, but it was clear to her that Pug was only minutes from death if he did not revive. Miranda tried to focus a spell of location to cast upon him. He might vanish at any second, and if she didn't have the spell ready, finding him might be more difficult. Forcing herself to clarity, she was about to chant the spell when Pug sat up. He took a gasping, painful breath, and then another. Aborting the spell, she said,
"What?"
Pug blinked and took more deep breaths.
"I don't know. The line that bound Macross to Sarig was severed, and that which recoiled flew back toward Mykemia. I followed Macross's mind, and suddenly I was here."
Miranda stood up, and Pug did likewise. Both of them were cold and stiff, and movement was difficult at first. Pug paced a little to restore circulation.
"That's the second time I've done this, and it was no more pleasant than the first." "Where is Macross?" asked Miranda.
"He must be close by. That's the only answer."
He moved to the door of the study and opened it, hurrying down the stairs of the tower. He pushed open the lower door and almost knocked over a young student whose eyes widened.
"Master Pug!" he exclaimed.
Pug and Miranda ignored the startled student and moved toward the main entrance to the academy. As they passed, students and teachers both turned to stare, and by the time they reached the main entrance to Stardock, the calling of his name had almost become a chant.
"Pug! Pug!"
Pug was breathless from excitement.
"I can feel him. He's close by," Miranda said. "I can too."
They went outside and looked around. Pug pointed.
"There!"
At the edge of the lake, a knot of excited students had gathered, and Pug could hear Knackle's voice shouting, "Stand back!" A man hung in the air, and Pug could sense the energies that danced around him. He was a beggar by his look, filthy, wearing only a dirty loincloth, his hair and beard a dirty mat, but he exuded power. The air sparkled as he seemed to be drawn up in the air, along the thread of energy that Pug had followed from the Celestial City. Pug and Miranda hurried to where the students were assembled, and Pug ordered, "Stand aside!" One looked over his shoulder.
"Master Pug!"
At the sound of his name, others backed away. Sitting at the edge of the water were Nakor and Sho Pai, watching in rapt attention as the man hovered in the air.
"Do you see?"
said Nakor as Pug came up to him.
"He attempts to rise, but that other force, that thing in the air, it's falling back here, toward the water."
If Nakor felt any surprise at Pug's appearance at Stardock, he didn't show it.
"Something marvellous has happened," said Nakor, "and soon we shall know a truth."
He glanced at Pug.
"Or maybe you know it already."
The beggar floated down into the water, where he sat waist deep. Pug watched as the thread of energy coiled down from the sky and at last seemed to vanish into the water around the man. He was weeping. Pug moved into the water and knelt next to the man.
"Macross?"
After a moment, the slender man turned to regard Pug. In a hoarse whisper, he said,
"Do you know what you've done? I was on the verge of godhood."
He closed his eyes for a moment, and a sob shook his shoulders. Then he took a deep breath.
"The knowledge, the understanding, it's leaving, like water spilling from a vessel too shallow to hold it."
He pointed to his own head and closed his eyes, as if trying to hold on to some image. At last he went on.
"It's as if I saw the universe in its entirety, but was looking through a hole in a fence. And as you pull me back from the fence, I see less and less by the second. Moments ago, I could have told you the secrets of the universe. Now, even as I try to remember, concepts fall away from me, and all I'm left with is the knowledge of what I've lost. Years of work undone."
"We had need," said Pug softly.
"My time here was done,"
insisted Macross, standing and looking at his successor. His knees were wobbly.
"It was not your place to call me back. My next mission was beyond your understanding."
"Obviously not," said Miranda. Macross looked to the woman without recognition. Then his eyes narrowed.
"Miranda?"
"Hello, Daddy," said the young woman. "It's been a while." Pug turned, his face showing surprise. Nakor laughed as he said,
Daddy.
Macross the Black, Sorcerer of Legend, glanced from Pug to Miranda and said,
"We need to talk."
He took a deep breath and said,
"I think I've regained my composure."
"Good," said Miranda, "because we're about to hand you another shock." Macross paused and seemed to brace himself.
"All right. What is it?"
"It's Mother," answered Miranda. "She's trying to destroy the world." Even Nakor could barely contain his astonishment at that remark. Finally, Macross said,
"I need a drink."
Miranda wrinkled her nose.
First, you need a bath.
While Macross bathed, Miranda, Pug, and Nacor sat in Pug's study. Chopin was attending the needs of the sorcerer, and Pug was opening a bottle of particularly good wine from Darkmoor.
"You need to share something with me," said Miranda.
Pug looked at his lover and said, "Seems we both need to do some sharing. Daddy?" Nacor grinned.
"I think that would make me your stepfather, except I was Jorna's first husband and Macross her second.
She called herself Jarnia when I was born," said Miranda. She seemed oblivious to the little man's delight in all this, and instead revealed what looked to be barely controlled fury. To Pug, she said,
"That stunt of yours in the Celestial City, when you removed Macross from the consciousness of Sarig..."
"What?" said Nacor, his eyes wide. "I must hear of this."
"What about it?" said Pug. "I could feel what you were doing."
"And?"
"The power, the sheer scope of the energies you used. You could have destroyed the Emerald Queen and a pitiful band of Pantathians, as I could step on an anthill. Why has this war gone on so long, Pug? Why haven't you acted to stop it?"
Pug sighed. "Because, like ants, those that survived would only scurry off into the dark and begin again. And there's more."
"What?"
asked Miranda. From the door, Macross said,
"Nothing we can speak of here. Not yet.
Pug, it's too dangerous."
Pug indicated an empty chair, and the freshly bathed sorcerer sat and took the cup that was waiting for him. Macross wore a borrowed robe, black instead of his usual brown. After a long sip, he said,
"Excellent. There are advantages, after all, to being alive."
Nacor said,
"I'm Nacor."
Macross's eyes narrowed. He studied Nacor's face a moment, then recognition dawned.
"The Isalani! I know you. You cheated me at cards once."
"I'm the one."
With enough emotion to almost bring tears to his eyes, Nacor admitted,
"You were my greatest challenge."
He turned to Pug.
"I was wrong when I said Macross wouldn't remember me."
Macross pointed at Nacor.
"That scoundrel did the only thing he could. He made me think he was using magic, so when I erected my defenses, he could manipulate the cards with simple sleight of hand."
"Sleight of hand?" said Pug.
"He stacked the deck,"
Macross said with a laugh.
"Not really," said Nacor modestly. "I switched the cards and slipped in a cold deck."
"Will you stop it?"
exclaimed Miranda, slamming her hand on the table.
"This is not some reunion of dear friends. This is..."
"What?" asked Pug.
"I don't know. We're trying to save the world, and you're reminiscing about card games."
Pug saw Chopin in the doorway, and he motioned for the young man to close the door, leaving the four of them in privacy. Chopin nodded, shut the door, and left. Pug said,
"First, I'd like to ask about this relationship. Seems you all have ties I knew nothing about."
Macross said,
"To all of you."
Pug suddenly looked alarmed.
"Don't tell me I'm your unacknowledged son."
He glanced at Miranda and saw his concern mirrored on her face.
"You can relax," said Macross. "You're not her brother."
He sighed.
"But when I said you were as much a son to me as any I have fathered, I meant it."
He sipped his wine and remembered.
"When you were born, I sensed greatness in you, lad. You were the son of a maid in Crydee and a wandering soldier.
But as the Serrani sense power in children and train them to the assembly, I saw you had greatness, perhaps more than any living magician in this world.
And you did what? Asked Nakor.
I unlocked that magic. Else how could Pug have come to the greater magic?
Sarig? Asked Pug.
Macross nodded. I am his creature.
Sarig? Said Nakor. I thought he was a legend.
He is, said Miranda, and a dead god to boot. But he's obviously not as dead as some think.
Pug said, Why don't you start at the beginning? And this time, the truth, added Miranda.
Macross shrugged.
The story I told you and Tomas, to while away the time we spent in the Garden of the City Forever, was a far more entertaining one than the truth, Pug. I was nothing as a child. A city boy from a distant land.
Stop it, said Miranda. You're doing it again, father.
Macross sighed. Ah, very well. I was born in the city of Kesh. My father was a tailor, and my mother a wonderful person. A woman who managed my father's accounts, kept an orderly house, and raised a willful and disobedient son. My father had many rich merchants among his clientele, and we lived well enough. Looking at his daughter, he said, Satisfied? She nodded. But I developed a taste for adventure, or at least for rough company. When I was little more than a lad, I went on a trip with some of my friends, without the knowledge or blessings of my parents. We bought a map, one reputed to show the location of a lost treasure.
Nakor nodded.
Slavers. Macross said, Yes, it was a trap to lure foolish boys who would end up on the Durbin slave block.
How long ago was this? Asked Pug.
Nearly 500 years ago, said Macross, at the height of the Empire's power. I escaped the slavers and hid in the mountains, but I became lost. Almost dead from starvation, I found an ancient abandoned temple. Half delirious, I collapsed on the altar and prayed to whatever god ruled that shrine to save me, in exchange for which I'd serve him.
Macross blinked, as if trying to remember.
I don't remember exactly what occurred next, but I think I spoke to Sarig, and either I died, and he took me before I went to the Hall of Limbs Kragma, or he got me just before my death. But from that moment on, I was Sarig's creature. It may be my prayer was the first to him since the Chaos Wars, though someone had to have built that shrine. Maybe someday I'll know. But whatever else, that dying prayer opened an avenue, a conduit, if you will. And from that ruined temple I emerged no longer a boy, but a man of magic. I knew things as if I possessed memories of them. Yet I know they weren't my memories. Sarig was within me, and part of me was within Sarig.
No wonder you had such power, said Pug.
Macross looked from face to face. To understand what I'm about to tell you, you need put aside all prejudices and preconceptions. The gods are both real and illusion. They are real in that they exist and exert force over this world and our lives. They are illusions in that they are nothing like what we perceive them to be.
Nakor laughed his cackling laugh.
This is wonderful.
Pug nodded.
Macross said,
Forces exist in nature, and we interact with them. As we think of them, some of them become what we think.
Wait a minute, said Miranda. You've lost me.
Think of ancient humans, huddled in a cave and contemplating the wonder of fire. On a cold, wet night, it's their friend and a source of life. They give to that fire a personality, and after a while they worship it. Then that evolves into the worship of the spirit of fire, which in turn becomes the god of fire.
Prandor, said Pug.
Exactly, said Macross. And when enough people worship, the energy that we call Prandor begins to manifest certain aspects, certain attributes that match the expectations of the worshippers.
Nako was almost beside himself with glee.
Man creates the gods, he exclaimed. In a manner of speaking, said Macross. His eyes reflected a deep pain. For most of my life, I've been a part of Sarig, his agent on Midkamia and elsewhere, his eyes and ears, and I thought my ultimate fate was to merge with him, to assume his mantle and return magic in all its glory to Midkamia.
Glancing at Pug, he said,
You were one of my better experiments. You returned the greater magic to Midkamia.
This is all very interesting, said Miranda. But what about Mother?
Nakor lost his grin. I think Jonna is dead.
Miranda said, What? How do you know?
When I last saw her, I sensed that another inhabited her body, and that which we knew as your mother was absent. I can only assume she is dead, or hidden away someplace.
Pug asked, How do all of you fit in this?
Nakor said, When I was young, I met a girl named Jonna, who was beautiful and smart, and who seemed interested in me. He grinned. I am not what you would call a handsome man, nor was I when I was young. But as all young men, I wished to be loved by a beautiful woman. She didn't love me, however. She loved power, and she hungered after what you call magic. She wanted to stay young and beautiful forever. She feared death and growing old even more. So I showed her tricks. I showed her how to manipulate what I call stuff. And when she had learned all I could teach her, she left me.
And found me, said Macross. He glanced at Miranda.
I met your mother in Kesh, and she was, as Nakor described, a beautiful young woman who pursued me with ardor. I ignored her hunger for power. I was blinded by youthful romance. Despite my age and ability, I acted young and foolish. I discovered her deceit later, after you were born, Miranda, but before she could learn all I could teach. She was centuries removed from that possibility, though she didn't know it, and I refused to show her more.
Miranda said, So you took me from her and left me with strangers? I was 10 years old.
No, said Macross. I accepted you when she left us both, and found you good people to raise you. I know I only visited you briefly from time to time, but it was difficult.
Pug said, And was this when you became the Black Sorcerer?
Yes, said Macross. Dealing with humanity at that level was too painful, and I didn't know it at the time, but Sarig had uses for me. The gods move in ways we cannot understand,
So much of what drove me was compulsion or desire, and clear goals were seldom mine. I found that island, abandoned by those who lived there, the people who had built that lovely villa. I assume they were a family of Keshians, probably nobles from Queg, who fled there when the secession occurred. And I built the Black Castle to scare away travellers, and life became much as it was when you first came to the Isle, Pug. What was that, 50, 60 years ago? Pug nodded. Sometimes it seems like yesterday, when Culgan and I stood on the beach reading your message. Pug studied the sorcerer's face. But so much of what you've done, so much of what you've told me, it's all been lies and deceit.
Yes, but much of it was truth as well. I could sense my future, even see it clearly at times. That was never a lie. My life was shown to me in idle thoughts, random dreams, and visions that would come unexpectedly. Were he still living in full, Sarig could have given me more. But were he still alive, as we think of such things, he wouldn't need me.
So when you told me that I was to take your place, said Pug, you really thought you were done here?
Yes, said Macross. That bit of storytelling I gave you about kings to advise and wars to stop was just that, something to divert your interest from me, to let me find my own way without your coming to find me when you needed some advice.
Pug saw Macross's anger growing again. If you were to have become one with Sarig, I wouldn't have been allowed to draw you back, Macross. He wouldn't have permitted it. The anger lessened, but didn't entirely vanish. Pug could see it smouldering below the surface like a banked fire.
There is that, Macross admitted. The problem is that I know how much I've forgotten.
Tears gathered in his eyes.
I can't explain.
Nakor's gaze narrowed. But was it you?
What do you mean? Asked Macross.
Were you the one who knew, or was it this god of magic?
Macross said softly,
I don't know.
Pug said, What do you mean?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Nakor said to Macross. But as you became more godlike, didn't your sense of self lessen? Didn't you feel more detached from who you were?
Macross nodded.
That's true. My life became a dream, a dim memory.
I suspect that had you achieved godhood, you'd not have known it. For you, the mind we call Macross, would have ceased to exist, observed Nakor.
Macross considered this.
I'll have to ponder that.
Miranda said, What about the Queen? Why isn't she my mother? Nakor shrugged.
I don't know. Maybe she made the wrong deal with the Pantathians. When she was Lady Clovis, she was hungering after eternal youth, and she was practicing some very nasty necromancy. Bad things to do, and she really was in over her head. That was 20 years ago, so who knows what has happened since then. She may have been punished for her failing in the plot with the overlord of the City of the Serpent River and his magician, or it may be simply expedient for whatever has taken her over to use her this way. I don't know. But I do know that the woman who was once wed to both of us is probably dead.
Pug turned to Miranda. If it's time for making a clean breast of things, why don't you tell us your part in this? Miranda said,
When I began to manifest powers, I hid that fact from my foster parents. They tried to get me interested in marrying one of the local merchants. So I ran away. She glared at Macross. That was 250 years ago, if you'd bothered to come investigate. Macross could only say, I'm sorry. I found a magician, an old woman named Gert. She smiled as she said, when I need to, I can look like her. And given some men's response to a pretty face and a round bosom, that's a good thing to know.
That's a very good trick, agreed Nakor.
She was hideous to look at, but she had the soul of a saint of Sung, and she took me in. She quickly recognized my abilities and taught me what she knew. After she died, I began seeking out others who could teach. About 50 years ago, I was arrested by the Keshian secret police. A fox of a man named Rauf Manif Hazara Khan saw in me a great weapon, so he recruited me. Hazara Khan is a well-known name in Krondor, said Pug. Wasn't he the brother of Kesh's ambassador to Krondor? The same. His brother had reported some very strange things about the Battle of Sethanon, not the least of which was the appearance of dragon riders in the sky, a gigantic explosion of green fire, and the utter destruction of one of the kingdom's more modest cities. So they set me to the task of discovering exactly what was going on. And? Said Pug. And I deserted. Nakor positively cackled with glee.
Oh, that's wonderful.
When I began discovering the truth, I realized we were involved with much more important things than serving one nation or another. That's certain, said Pug. We've got some interesting problems to confront, and some choices to make.
Most important, said Nakor. We have to discover who is behind all these things that are going on.
The third player, said Miranda. Macross said, I know who it is. The Demon King, said Miranda. No, said Pug. Looking at Macross, he said, if it's as I think it is, the situation is such that we may not even discuss it safely.
Certainly not here, agreed Macross. And we could use an expert on certain law from the Order of Aishap.
Which means we need to go to Sarth, said Pug. Macross yawned.
Oh, very well, but I could use a nap first.
Nakor got up.
I'll take you to my apartment. It has extra bedrooms in it.
Pug stood as well. Don't let him keep you up all night, he said to Macross, and he and Nakor left. Pug turned to Miranda. Well, it seems we're finally getting to the heart of things. Miranda said, Maybe. My father is a self-confessed liar, remember? And you? I've never lied to you, she said defensively. But you've hidden things from me. What about you? She said, her tone accusatory. You still haven't told me why you don't just fly across the water and sink the Queen's fleet. I saw what you did. I couldn't believe the power you control. Pug said, I can explain that, but not until we're someplace safe. Safe from what? I can't explain that until then either. Miranda shook her head. You irritate me at times, Pug. Pug laughed. I expect I do. You're not exactly without edges yourself. She stood up and crossed to stand before him. Putting her arms around him, she said, One truth. I love you. He said, I love you too. And I never thought I'd hear myself say that to another woman after Katala died. Well, it's about time, she said. Pug hesitated. What about Kalis? I love him as well. When she felt Pug go tense, she said, but in a different way. He's a friend and very special to me. And he needs a great deal and asks for so very little. If we live through this, I think I can help him find happiness. Pug said, does that mean you're choosing him? Miranda drew back slightly so she could look Pug in the eyes. No, stupid. It means I think I know a few things about him and what he truly needs. Like what? Let's all live through this first, then I'll tell you. He smiled and kissed her. They lingered in their embrace. Then she hugged him tight and, whispering in his ear, she added, maybe. He slapped her on the bottom and she laughed. Then he kissed her again.